See that? I'll always love you.
Everyone to Xenon Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 28. This podcast show is for all the Xenon Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. Well, hello everyone and welcome back to the Xenon Uber show. I hope everyone is doing very well. As you can hear, I am a little bit better. Thank God for drugs. It does wonders for nerve irritations and stuff. I am still recuperating. It's only been a couple of days since I posted the last show. But I wanted, like I said, I wanted to get this one out so to make up for the fact that I did miss one. On the recuperating front, I found out why I was in so much pain. They actually put this little thing called the BMP. It's called a bone morphogenic protein inside my back where the cage is, the fusion plate. And the main reason they do that is because this thing causes nerve irritation so that the nerves are irritated and the body then forces these proteins to come out. And by these proteins coming out, it helps the bones fuse. It causes these proteins and the bones fuse and all this technical stuff. But they forgot to tell me that the whole process is quite painful. So, me being me, you know, I'm going to call up and ask, what's going on? Did I do something wrong? Have I done something wrong and disabled myself or something like that? And she's like, no, this is what happens. That's what happens after 2 or 3 days. It finally starts kicking in. And I'm like, well, you could have told me that. You could have just prepped me a little bit, you know, so I could have had some really good drugs on hand. And, I find out I'm hypersensitive to medicines now. I can't take anything more than Advil or something because it just like totally wigs me out. And I don't like being in that kind of mental state. I really don't. And I'm also recuperating from the shots that they gave me while I was in hospital. They gave me these morphine shots. And I don't know if anybody's ever had to have morphine. They gave them to me in my thighs and my backside. And oh my God. You can play connected dots on my thighs and my backside right now. It's just like, ow, hello. I do not like this stuff. I got to be honest with you. So, yeah, but I am the bionic woman, but I'm the rusty bionic woman at the moment. So it's going to be a while, but, you know, hey, like I said before, that I am under strict orders, under penalty of death practically, not to do anything and not to be able to go back to work. So, needless to say, I'm going a little bit stir-crazy, and my son and I are having conversations, so if that gives you an idea of my mental state, it's like, oh, God, I'm going to be a basket case by the time I go back to work. But, you know, hey, not more than what I am, right? The song snippet you hear on this episode is called September, Cry For You. So if you want to go check it out on YouTube and also buy it. It's a really, I love the song. It's a really nice song. It makes me get up and dance when I could. Now it just makes me thumb my feet, you know, thrum, 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 twiggle my fingers. The book review we have, I have to say thank you to actually Heather. She sent me in a book review. And the book review is called Redemption by Susan M. Beck. In the summary of the book, on the back of the book says, Angel is a small town girl who finds herself trapped within her worst nightmare, a state penitentiary. She finds inner strength, maturity, friendship, and love, while at the same time giving to others something she thought she lost within herself, hope. It is a story of how Angel rediscovers hope, blazing within the piercing blue eyes of another inmate, Ice. Now, it's part one of a three-part series, and unfortunately, the latter two books cost something like $60 or $70, according to Heather. So, if it's a good series, you know, you wouldn't mind paying that out. If anybody else has read the second and third part of that series, please let me know. Give me a holler, let me know, and so that I can turn around and put that forth so everybody else can hear the review and see if they want to go out and get it. We're going to rock on into the review for the last episode so that we can go ahead and continue on with this episode. So, without further ado, here we go. When we last left Xena and Gabrielle, Xena had woken up after the previous night's emotional lovemaking, where Xena finally let Gabrielle love her truly. She rose and left Gabrielle, but went to her private rose gardens to get a small token of affection for Gabrielle to assuage any thoughts that Xena might be actually pummeling Solon for his actions from the previous evening. Delia found Xena when she was in the rose garden and ribbed her for whistling in the corridor, which Xena could barely live down. Then she went to find Atreus and guiltily make him realize that she was in charge and he was now to be Gabrielle's personal guard. She then had Atreus join her and Gabrielle for breakfast, where she let them both know she knew of their attempt to keep what happened a secret. Then they all discussed what had happened with Gabrielle, and Gabrielle spoke of her plan to embarrass Solon into learning a lesson by having him being beaten by someone who was more subservient than him. When Solon was brought forth Xena, it was then that they all realized that it was his true intention, after all, to having a confrontation with Xena. So that's where the recap was for number 27, and we continue on with episode 28, or chapter 6 of the Conquer series, Petal of the Rose, part 2. So we continue on. Chapter 6. He felt the stroke of death upon his heart.
"Don't look so worried, little one." I stroked Gabrielle's cheek with the backs of my fingers. "I already promised you that I wouldn't hurt him too badly, didn't I?"
"Yes, you did."
She gave me a nervous smile. It was mid-morning, and the 3 days I gave Solon passed quickly. We stood in the outer chamber of our rooms. I felt very strongly that Solon would not be apologizing, and so I intended to show up in full battle gear to meet my challenger. Gabrielle helped me dress. I wore my customary leather trousers and silk shirt. My boots were of thick black leather. The front of the boots had been plated shin guards already sewn in. The tops of each boot ended just below my knee, with protectors attached there also. I had a thick leather and metal-studded gauntlets, but the only armor I wore was the breastplate of pounded bronze that connected to my back piece. I belted my sword, adjusting it on my hip. I looked down at Gabrielle, who still watched me through her apprehensive gaze.
"Then what is it, my love?"
She hesitated, shifting uneasily from foot to foot.
"You are still a very good warrior, aren't you, Xena?"
She asked the question in such an earnest that I hadn't had the heart to berate or humiliate her. I should have known what caused the worried frown. Gabrielle had never seen me fight. Oh, I allowed her to the practice field to watch me spar on occasion, but she'd never seen me involved in a true scrap. She read more of my battlefield exploits than any mortal alive has, and I'm sure she thought most of the events embellished tremendously. It was odd, however. The moment that I held this heavy sword in my hand, I was 20 again. Failure simply wasn't an option.
"Yes, little one," I answered gently. "I'm still a very good warrior."
Gabrielle brightened considerably, but I could still sense something right in her manner. I stepped back and sat down on the heavy wooden chest in the middle of the room. Moving my weapon aside, I took both of her hands into my own and pulled her closer to me. Looking up at her this way, I could see that what mounted to fear in her emerald eyes.
"What is all this about, Gabrielle?"
"I had a dream last night,"
she promptly.
"I had a dream last night," she'd answered promptly.
"What did you see, love?"
Gabrielle's dreams were something of an enigma to us. She would often get glimpses of the future, but so little or so disjointed as to be confusing. On occasion, she could foretell disaster through the visions her dreams brought her. Once or twice, we were even able to change the fates spun on our lives, but today seemed different. Gabrielle had never acted fearful like this before.
"He drew a dagger from his boot."
"Who did? Solon?"
"Yes, it was hidden and I..."
"I know, little one. He has it tucked inside his left boot."
"How did you..."
"That's why I'm a good warrior, Gabrielle," I smiled. "I make a habit of watching people very closely. That's not all, though. is it?" She shook her head back and forth.
"You're going to kill Solon."
"What?" I laughed. "Gabrielle, I already told you that
I know what you said, Xena. But in my dream I saw Solon lying on the ground, and you were kneeling above him. You had brought your sword down in his head. I saw him lying there, your blade still quivering after you plunged it into him, and then into the ground."
"Gabrielle," I pulled her trembling figure down into my lap, "I promise you, unless something extreme or unavoidable happens, I will not kill the boy. We've changed the outcome of your dreams before. Don't worry, little one, please. Trust me." A tearful nod, and then a kiss to my cheek was my reward.
"I'll try. You will take care, though, right?"
"Right." I playfully kissed her neck. "And at the end of the day, what will I get for my reward after having been so good?"
A sweet treasure. You get me."
She giggled. I was happy that I'd been able to assuage her fears. "Yes, but I already possess you," I countered.
"Then tonight, I will possess you,"
she replied in a seductive tone that caused my muscles in my belly to flutter. My eyes closed as a wave of intense desire rushed through me. I reached in and kissed her hard, reluctantly pulling away from the sweet lips. "We will continue this tonight, my love. But if we don't get up right this moment, I am stripping every stitch of clothing from both of our bodies and taking you to bed." Gabrielle laughed. Gods, how I loved that sound. She was unable to do it for so long. It gladdens my heart that I am the cause of it now.
"And this will be a bad thing? How?"
she teased. I abruptly stood, still holding on to her, her feet barely touching the floor. "Come on with you. Are you ready to play your part?" She nodded and adjusted my armor again. "Then school is in session, shall we?" I offered my hand and we left for the training field. I have to admit, if only for myself, I made a rather impressive image as I walked down to the courtyard. The sun was high in the sky, and every bit of metal on me, from my breastplate to the lion's hilt of my sword, reflected the brilliant light. At least Solon had the decency to swallow hard at the sight, even if he did cover it right away with the snotty air he had about him.
"Lord Conqueror,"
he said as I passed him, walking up to Atreus. I ignored the boy, and I could really see he was inexperienced showing. He grew angry, and a childish temper is something you simply can't afford on the battlefield. I exchanged a few words with Atreus, as he reacquainted me with the young officer by the name of Garamond. The lieutenant was the first to take a shift as Gabrielle's personal guard, and I instantly liked the boy. I realized who he was once I saw his face. "I sealed it healed up nicely." I pointed to his chin where a scar ran across his dark skin.
"I'm surprised you remember doing that to me, Lord Conqueror, especially after the pathetic attempt I made that day."
I gave a wry smile to the soldier's genuine humility. I never forget a scar, or anyone who fights against me well enough to earn one and walk away. I was remembering that day on the training field just a short time ago. Atreus and I flexed our aging muscles against the newest cadets, and the young man that fought the hardest turned out to receive Atreus' highest recommendation. I was quite proud of Gabrielle. As she worried as she was playing her part very well. We all agreed that even though Solon was probably quite capable of using the weapon he carried, I'd be the victor today. I explained to my lover that psychology was an enormous part of the battle. To humiliate Solon, we would have to act as if this was just all a stroll through the woods. Gabrielle was doing very well at affecting a casual air of indifference to the proceedings, as was Atreus. I was used to it, and it gave my naturally overconfident nature a chance to come out.
"If you're ready, Lord Conqueror,"
Solon said impatiently, indicating the training field with a sweep of his arm. Atreus stood next to me with his arms folded across his chest.
"What? In a hurry to meet Hades, young pup?"
That remark earned the captain a glare from the young man, but I had to laugh at him. "I've met him," I said, turning to face Solon. "Trust me, he's not much on conversation." We all had a good laugh, all of us except Solon, who was getting more frustrated by the heartbeat. We were all acting on our roles, even though Gabrielle said she didn't think she could actually watch the fight and not show any emotion. We agreed that she should leave before the final act actually began. Of course, She said you would leave with a great deal of style and dignity, whatever that meant. I was soon to find out.
I'll leave you to play, then,
Gabrielle said. She walked up to me and squeezed my hand a little tighter than usual, but the expression on her face remained carefree.
Where are you off to while I'm having fun? I teased back.
I'm off to have a bath, and then a fitting for a new dress. Will you be long?
Gabrielle asked this after she had walked up to the first two stairs that led from the courtyard. She turned toward us, as if nonchalantly awaiting my answer, and it struck me, for the first time I was seeing one of the reasons why Gabrielle stayed alive so long, as a slave. She even had me believing in her lack of concern regarding the upcoming challenge.
Will I be long? I answered, reiterating her question. I turned my head toward Sol and looked him up and down. I hardly think so. I'll join you in the bath, I grinned.
Very well, Gabrielle answered, climbing to the stairs once more. Try not to get so much blood on your trousers this time.
I don't see why you should complain. It's not like it was my blood.
But Scylla had a fiendish time trying to remove it,
Gabrielle quipped. She stopped one last time and looked at Solon dead on.
It was very nice knowing you, Solon.
She didn't wait for an answer before she turned and left, and it was all I could do not to laugh at the expression on his face. Now the playing was over. It was time for the fighting to begin.
Are you ready, young pup? I asked.
Solon appeared to be taking a true hatred of the nickname that Atreus and I had grown fond of using.
I'll try and take it easy on you, Conker. After all, I've heard that you've grown soft.
We walked into the training field, a squared-off arena set up for sparring use. I didn't stop walking, but turned to him.
You better pray to whatever gods an insolent boy such as you prays to. I'll show you how soft I've become.
I should warn you, Conker. I learned my sword play from Calliopus, the greatest warrior centaur in Greece.
I stopped and laughed heartily this time. I simply couldn't resist. I gave him my best feral smile and leaned in close.
I was trained by Ares, the god of war.
I continued walking onto the field, but Atreus told me later that I missed the most priceless of expressions on the boy's stunned face. The sound of metal against metal is still like some mutual... The sound of metal against metal is still like so much music to my ears. The sound of metal against metal is still like so much music to my ears. The love of a good fight must be in the blood. The boy was good. I'll have to give Calliopus his due. His inexperience showed, however, and I had been less forgiving or a good deal... However, had I been less forgiving or a good deal angrier, he could have been dead a few times over. His downfall was his inexperience, but what kept him in the fray was his youth. I was in good shape. It would be some time before I actually tired. My muscles certainly felt the difference between a practice spar and the heavy hitting they were now doing. I knocked Solon to the ground for the second time, and good-naturedly allowed him to regain his feet. Perhaps I should not have chuckled or added that little sneer as I waited for him to rise. His face was flushed with anger and embarrassment, as he lashed out as a child would, with words meant to cripple or hurt. I didn't answer any of his little attempts to bait me until our blades met and we came face to face. Each of us had both hands on the hilt of our swords, using nothing but strength in our arms to push against one another.
I met Gabrielle before, you know.
I ignored him and hoped he wasn't about to say what I thought he was. I feigned indifference. He grinned, sweat trickling down the side of his face, dirt smeared across one cheek.
She was a slave to a rich privateer that I met in Thrace. He brought her on the deck for the crew's enjoyment. I fucked her till she bled.
He whispered the last, and the boy never even realized what he'd done with those malicious words. Where they were truth or falsehood, it mattered not. It only took one quick exhale, and the beast... was free. I brought my knee up hard up into his unprotected groin, and heard the breath at his strangled in his throat. His muscles instantly relaxed, and I pulled my blade from his, bringing my hilt down hard on the top of his sword hand. He cried out, and I heard the bones break. I believe the beast that now controlled me laughed out loud at the sound. I threw the point of my blade into the dirt at our feet, and hit his midsection, to the right and then to the left. He must have tried to defend himself, because I felt something hit me in the jaw. I tasted blood in my mouth and swiped my hand across my lip. The sight and the taste caused the monster inside nearly to howl in delight. I spit the blood back at him, advancing as he backed away. I believe I might have heard my name called, but it was too late now.
Xena didn't exist. She was only a shell for the madness that lived only for bloodlust. I drew back and pulled all I had into the one punch to his jaw. The force lifted him from his feet, and once again, there was a satisfying crunch of breaking bones. The beast pounded on the fallen boy, holding him by the collar with one hand, while the other smashed into his face. The feel of warm blood on my hands only pushed me further. The beast raged and screamed out one word, "Death!" I jumped to my feet, still straddling the boy. I reached out for my sword, still quivering, impaled in the ground. As I twirled the blade in my hand, I heard a scream full of rage in my ears and wondered if it was my own voice or the beast inside that made the incensed sound. I could hear my name. It was as if it was in a dream. My movement slowed as my brain tried to make sense of my actions. I could always hear their voices outside of me, but this time there was no going back. The darkness had spread too far, taken far too much control to give it up now. I raised my sword as high as my arms could reach, then quickly brought the point of the blade down straight into the young man's face. At the last heartbeat, my blade met with metal that slipped in front of my victim's face. The maneuver sent my sword rearing to the ground next to his head. The razor-sharp blade came so close, it sliced a gash across his cheek, but he was already too unconscious to care. I heard my name again as I stood there, both hands still holding onto the sword. I could feel my heart pounding against my chest until it ached. Then there was a scream. The woman's scream frightened the beast into submission. It cowered and curled itself until it was left standing there, exhausted and weak. It cowered and curled on itself until I was left standing there, exhausted and weak. Then the scream again, except it was closer this time. I turned toward the source of the sound just in time to see Gabrielle, wearing only her bathrobe, crumbled to the ground near to the low wall that ran outside the training field. I took one look at my bloody hand still holding my blade down to the ground, and Atreus beside me. We all seemed frozen in place. Atreus had had his sword buried in the dirt under mine, his quick action sparing Solon's life. I looked down at the bloody mess that I made of my son and moved away from towards Gabrielle. "Call the healer," I rasped, and Atreus nodded, relief flooding his features. I knelt beside Gabrielle, and someone shoved a rag before me. I wiped my hands of the red stickiness and scooped the small blonde into my arms. I looked up again, just as Kuros, my healer, and two of his apprentices ran out to the field. I silently prayed to Athena as I cradled Gabrielle against me. I asked the goddess to spare my son's life, unsure as to what extent I had injured the boy. As I watched Kuros, who nodded his head that the boy was still alive, I looked into the sight that met Gabrielle as she came across the field. It did indeed look like her vision. From this angle, my sword looked as though it was embedded in Solon's head, while it was still really fixed on the ground beside him. The oddness of fate struck me just then. I had to wonder, was this Gabrielle's vision, or unable to see the whole picture from her angle, or was I indeed fated to kill my own son before Atreus stepped in and changed the course of events? Gabrielle stirred, and I touched her cheek, attempting to rouse her further. One of the maids who had apparently rushed outside Gabrielle handed me a cup of water. "Gabrielle?"
"Xena."
She opened confused eyes, then widened with the knowledge of a vision.
"Oh, Xena, I—"
"No, little one, it's all right. Solon is still alive, but no thanks to me. He owns his continued mortality to Atreus and you this time." By now, Kuros had already made his way inside with Solon's unconscious form on a stretcher. "He's inside already. Kuros has seen to him. Are you able to stand?" She nodded, and we slowly made our way inside, stopping first, on her assistance, at Solon's quarters. Kuros was washing his hands when he came into the bedchamber. The sealer's assistants were cleaning and bandaging the boy up, but he still looked like as though he was lifeless.
"He has not regained consciousness."
"He has not regained consciousness, Lord Cockrell,"
Kuros said upon seeing us. I wasn't sure what I felt, looking down on the boy, who was my only child. Moments ago I wanted him dead, but now he looked rather pitiful, lying there all swollen and broken. I know I should have had more compassion in me for my son, but some anger at his words still lingered within me. I knew it would be a long time, if ever, before I was able to resolve this event in my head. "The extent of his injuries?" I asked. Kuros sighed, and I knew that could not be good.
"The good news is his wounds are all broken and contusions."
"That's good?"
Gabrielle asked incredulously.
"Actually, my lady, it is. Bones mend, bruises heal. The body is very good curative medicine when it given proper environment.
cuts, stabs, wounds. These take a chance at introducing infection to the body. The young emissary will heal in good time. He has a number of broken ribs. His jaw, nose, and his left wrist are broken too. Everything else is simply bruised. I am most worried about his right hand, however. The bones in that have been broken. At least two of the fingers appear crushed. I know I winced visibly as Curls went on the list of Solon's injuries. This was what the beast could do in a matter of heartbeats. Gabrielle and I exchanged a look, and she slipped a hand around my waist. I fear, as talented as a healer I consider myself, my abilities may not be enough to restore full motion to the young man's hands. I'm sure you'll do your best, Curls, and I thank you, I said softly.
Curls, would you allow another healer to examine his broken hand? Gabrielle asked.
Of course, lady. I have no pride in that arena. You have someone in mind?
If my lord has no objections. I know a healer who has very knowledgeable ways in ancient healing arts. He came from the land of Qin. But at last hired, he now resides on the coast in Padanus. But I last heard he now resides on the coast in Epidamus. His name is Yupan.
You know the healer Yupan? Kuros asked. The startled look in Kuros' eyes caused me to wonder. Was this the same healer who taught Gabrielle her inventive massage techniques?
He and I served in the same household at one time, Gabrielle answered.
His reputation is quite well known, my lord, Kuros added my apparent concern. If the lady can persuade him to visit, I think the emissary will be in excellent hands.
Gabrielle looked up to me as if for approval, and I quickly nodded my head. Of course, we will send a messenger out at once. I broke away from the tomb to stand at the foot of Solon's bed, my hands on my hips as I watched tight-lipped as the young man wrapped Solon's wounds in clean bandages and then bound the broken bones in rigid splints made of woven wool bark. I had meant to teach the young man a lesson, not take his life from him. Still wasn't sure what I should be feeling. I only know that I had an ache in my chest that had little to do with the exertion I had so recently displayed.
Let us know if his continuing changes. Let us know if his condition changes at all, or if he asks for anything.
I turning away from the young man's bed.
Of course, my lord, Kuro said in an understanding tone.
Gabrielle casually tossed a towel over the small washtub of water where our bloodied clothes were soaking. I had been staring at the bloody water from my reclining position in the tub. I felt Gabrielle's fingers massage the tightness from my neck and shoulders. Eventually her fingers and the warm water worked their magic, and I relaxed as she washed my hair. I sat beside the fireplace on the very cushions that had been placed there only 2 days ago by my lovely consort. Gabrielle rested up against me, slightly behind, working a comb through my hair. I stared into the flames, knowing that the small blonde behind me had been patiently waiting all these candle marks for me to yet utter one more word at this time.
I was in better humor since the dinner meal, when Kuros announced that Solon had indeed awakened.
The young man did his best, even in pain, to be as insolent as possible to those around him. The healer laughed at our relieved smiles, saying he was sure the beating had not taken a toll on the young man's psyche. Kuros assured us that he would make Solon's recovery as painless as possible, but much depended on the boy's desire to heal himself. I agreed. I'd come back from some debilitating injuries to pass, but not without a great deal of hard work. After we received these encouraging words, Gabrielle set about writing a letter to her old friend Yupan. She explained to me the kindness the old man showed her, and how she often hid in his workrooms, watching or assisting in the healer's medicinal arts. She sent a message on his way to Epidanus, and asked that the healer journey to Corinth at the first possible chance. I hoped that the miraculous stories Gabrielle told me of this man's ability were not just those of a young girl's imagination. I had seen a great deal, however, during my life in Qin. I had seen healing taking place that was nothing sort of magical, and so I again prayed to Athena that the older healer was still alive.
Would you like to talk about it?
Gabrielle's voice brought me back to the present. No, I turned with a wry smile. But that wouldn't be very fair to you. She continued to comb my hair, and I admit
The action was as soothing as a massage. "What in the world were you doing down there anyway, and in your dressing gown?" I asked.
"I was determined to trust in you," she answered. "I did enter the bath, and I believe I dozed off. I slept about as well as you did last night."
She paused then. It was nerves and worry, but I spent a good portion of the night tossing about, unable to get comfortable. Gabrielle was so still that I never realized she suffered from the same malady.
"I know I fell asleep because I saw the vision again. It seemed so clear, Zena, and it frightened me so. Just before you put your sword into him, Solon looked... well, he looked as if he tricked you in some way, almost triumphant. I had to warn you, but when I drew near, I thought I was seeing it all again. It was a little overwhelming. I don't usually make a habit of fainting."
"From your vantage point, it did indeed look as though my blade had entered the boy's skull," I mused thoughtfully. "Solon would be dead right now if it hadn't been for Atreus. I would have killed my own son, and I would have barely remembered how it happened."
"The darkness?" she asked.
I nodded, amazed that Gabrielle had a way of making this horrible monster sound so slight, so as to merely be thought of as a minor character flaw. "Monster, you mean?"
"Zena, you make it sound as if the beast lives within you."
"And so it does, Gabrielle. It thrives on the hateful, evil side of my nature. When it sees an opportunity to strike, it does so. To stop it after a certain point would be like trying to wrest a hound from its prey."
"If it truly is a beast you say it is, Zena, then it can be treated like any other living thing. If it's a creature, as you say, then it may be tamed, controlled, or even killed,"
Gabrielle stated logically. "I only wish that could be so, little one. The blackness that comes over me in the times of anger or battle, this curse as I know now, hasn't always been this way. I knew it was a treasure at one time, a cherished part of myself. I can neither destroy it nor control it. I asked for it a long time ago, when I was still a young girl, and it was granted me. It was a gift freely given and accepted," I said mournfully.
"A gift? Zena, who would give such a thing to a young girl?"
"My patron."
"Athena?"
Gabrielle looked stunned, and I turned slightly, realizing she hadn't put it together. "No, little one. It happened when I was a young woman, living in Amphipolis. It was before Cortese came through our village. Before my brother... Athena wasn't my patron until the evening before I invaded Athens. For the first time in many, many seasons, I spared a thought for my dead brother. Lysias had been just a boy when Cortese's army swept through Amphipolis. I convinced the young man to stay for and fight for what was theirs. They were victorious in battle, but the wounds I suffered on them on that day shaped the pattern of my life and the lives of those around me. Lysias fell in battle, still a boy, a full head shorter than myself, but determined to fight as a man. Taurus ran off. Branded a coward, he never returned to his village. Cyrene, her youngest child dead, her oldest never to be heard from again, held her only daughter responsible for the fate of the other two. I remember it so clearly, standing beside Lysias's body, watching as my mother came in and saw her baby's body for the first time. I tried to explain, to tell her what happened, how I failed to protect him, to explain in some way, but she just slapped me hard across the face. I stood there for a few more moments, frozen in shock and grief. I watched as Cyrene threw her body across a dead sun and sobbed. That night I packed together what few things belongings I had, and set out on my own. Some 10 seasons later, I heard that Taurus found Cortese and his men. My older brother tried to infiltrate the warlord's band and was found out. He died the kind of death that I would not have wanted to describe to my mother, had we even been speaking at the time. Taurus justified himself in my eyes with his death, but my priorities were so skewed back then. I look to the past and think how much more valuable he would have been alive. I could have used an older brother. God knows Cyrene could have used a son. After having seen what 45 seasons of life had shown me, I would have taken a live coward for a brother over a dead hero any day. My meager bit of satisfaction was that I crucified Cortese when I finally caught up with him. It didn't take him long to die considerably. Nearly every bone in his body was broken before I had him strung up. I never saw my mother again after that. I heard she used to tell people that all her children died on the day of Cortese's raid.
Zena.
What? I asked, suddenly back from my visiting my own demons.
Who was your patron before you served Athena?
Gabrielle asked. Ares, I said flatly.
The dark one?
She asked, almost in a whisper. I nodded.
You served Ares, did his bidding.
Again the slight nod of my head. It was actually worse than that. I was his mistress. I said, and I felt my cheeks grow hot with shame.
Did you love him?
Gabrielle asked. I turned to look at her fully. It took most of my control not to laugh at this young woman. Gabrielle had such narrow focus where I was concerned. It touched my heart that the expression on her face was dreadfully serious. I took her hands into mine and kissed each one.
Are you jealous, little one?
I returned just as seriously.
He is a god, after all, Zena. How can one not be jealous? I'm sure he makes my abilities look lowly in comparison.
I didn't want her pain to go on, but her words flattered and touched me at once. I became aware for the first time of a rather well-hidden jealous streak that Gabrielle possessed when it came to me. This time I couldn't help but smile, so overwhelmed as I was by the feelings directed toward me from the small slip of a girl. I could see the green color in her eyes grow just a tad deeper, and a right eyebrow had a natural arch to it that seemed to spike up a bit when she displayed the possessive side of herself. I reached out and stroked her cheek, bringing her eyes to meet mine. Gabrielle, don't you know that you possess every quality in a mate that I have ever prayed to Athena for? I know she saw the truth of it in my eyes. I watched as her features returned to normal, that beautiful pink tinge of embarrassment that I love so, returning to her cheeks. I am always amazed every time I see it, for a young woman to have lived the life that Gabrielle has, and still have the ability for the flush of innocence to flower up on her face, at the least little compliment for me, that will always bring joy to my heart. Now, are you going to finish combing my hair or not? I turned my back to her to hide my smile. She again began to comb the dark locks, still slightly damp, but drying quickly from the heat of the fire. A comfortable silence hung in the air. I was not a verbal person by nature, and so it was comfort that Gabrielle could make my continuous attack of speechlessness. I could feel the question in the air, however. It hung there, suspended aloft in both our minds. It had to do with Solon's taunt to me. No, actually his boast as we fought. I wanted to know if it was true, and Gabrielle was dying to ask what he'd done to trick me. I could feel her query come on the slightest intake of breath as she prepared to speak.
Zena.
Yes, little one.
What did he do? Solon, what did he do to cause your darkness to emerge?
I licked my lips, my mouth suddenly dry. I didn't want to be the one to cause her pain. Hadn't she had enough humiliation for one lifetime? But how could I lie to her, she who could have seen so well into my heart? He said something, I answered.
That doesn't sound like you, Zena. Allowing him to bait you...
She suddenly stopped. I suppose my silence only confirmed the suspicion he had.
It was about me.
She questioned, but we both knew she already had the answer.
What did he say?
It doesn't matter. I impatiently rose and closed the room, pulling back the heavy tapestry to look out into the village, smoke curling lazily from the chimneys of the new-built cottages. I felt her rise and step behind me. She circled my waist with her arms, pressing her cheek to against my back. I covered her small hands with my own, enjoying the feeling of pressed against me.
I always thought this might happen, she said. I'm surprised that it never occurred to you.
She was right. I never even thought about it. What if a dignitary from another land visited the palace? What if he'd had Gabrielle that way? Even owned her at what time? I bit my lower lip at the thought.
What did Solon say to you, Zena?
She asked again. I sighed and closed my eyes. That... He said that... He'd been with you. Had you. He said it was a ship, probably the pirates. You were... I paused, breathed deeply. You were the entertainment. She held me tighter, and I wondered just who was coming, forwarding who. It's possible. She held me tighter, and I just wondered who was comforting who.
It's possible, I suppose. I know that's not what you want to hear, but it may not be the last time we hear it.
Do you remember?
I could feel her shaking her head against me. No, but it happened a great deal.
You're right. I hugged her from me tighter. It's not what I wanted to hear. I answered in a strangled voice.
I don't remember places or their faces. I always hid inside of myself until they were finished with me. until it seemed safe to come out again. I felt her pull away from me and turned, catching her in my strong grasp, pulling her face back to meet mine. She had tears in her eyes, and I wanted to shed my own empathy.
I don't want to disappoint you, Xena. The Conqueror needs a queen that...
is exactly like you, I finished for her. I brushed away the wisps of golden hair that had fallen across her eyes, letting my hand run along the line of her cheek to her jaw. I chose you, and accept all the consequences that choosing you implies. I believe we can do this, Gabrielle, as long as we do it together. It won't always be easy, love, but nothing worthy of a queen ever is. I know she wanted to say something, but she held her tongue, nodding and then lowering her head. I lifted her chin with two fingers. You have done nothing to feel or shame over, little one. If anything, the disgrace belongs to those who would have hurt you in such a way. I can't promise you that I will never feel anger or even jealousy at that fact, but I do promise I will never direct those emotions to you. Gabrielle, you've read my scrolls. You know what kind of woman I was. I paused. She was smart enough to know that I referred to my sexual proclivities. I used and I took. I know a few special scrolls. I know a few special scrolls I own contain bards taking artistic license with some of my more private moments. Why anyone would want to read about an orgy was beyond me. But the stories amused me at one time. Now they only filled me with embarrassment. Gabrielle nodded. Then why would you think you have to be more shameful for?
I'm not sure. It just seems that I do.
I leaned forward and tenderly kissed her forehead. She, leaning into the loving gesture. That is because you look at me through love's eyes, little one. I thank the gods for it, and I pray that it never ends, I whispered, and because I look at you exactly the same way. Perhaps that is why we will never see our relationship in the same way as outsiders do. I will never, ever appear evil in your eyes, and you will never, ever be anything but beautiful and innocent in mine. I wrapped my arms around her, and we stayed that way for some time. Finally, I looked down and grinned at her. Didn't you say something about possessing me tonight? Again, that lovely blush.
I did,
she said softly, nuzzling the skin at my neck.
But if you don't mind too much, I'm in a different mood tonight.
Oh? And what kind of mood would that be, love?
A snuggling mood,
she answered as she burrowed into my body further. A snuggling mood, I repeated. I could feel a ridiculous grin beginning. Gods, how I love this woman, if for no other reason than simply because she taught me how to feel. She nodded her head up and down.
A snuggling mood.
A snuggling mood, I repeat thoughtfully. Well, I suppose it would be different in experience. Are you a good snuggler? After all, I am the Conqueror, and I do believe I deserve the very best.
I'm a very good snuggler, my lord,
she whispered, kissing my collarbone. I leaned down and scooped her into my arms, thoroughly enjoying the bright smile on her face. Then your wish is my command, my queen. I carried her into her bedchamber and kicked the door closed with my foot. We didn't make love that evening, although earlier I certainly had the battle lust for it. Instead, we took turns holding one another throughout the night. I'm still not certain I want that little bit of information to be made common knowledge. I like to keep some semblance of my dignity intact. However, between myself and the scroll I write upon, it is the most beautiful and peaceful night's rest I have ever experienced. To be continued in Chapter 7, Fettered in Prison and Without Relief. Chapter 7, Fettered in Prison and Without Relief. Addendum to the Lord Conqueror's Manuscript, Separate Parchment. Added in Xena, the Lord Conqueror's Presence by Queen Gabrielle of Podidia.
Xena, I called out her name, quite concerned by this time. The way the corners of her mouth appeared, upturned as if smiling in her sleep, took some of the worry from me. Xena, I called out again, sitting on the bed beside her prone figure. Her smile turned into a frown and she pulled the pillow cover over her, covering her face. Xena, it's rather late in the morning for such an early riser. Are you ill? I saw the pillow shake back and forth and I smiled. This was a Xena that I knew. She could be childlike and innocent, with a very playful dimension to her personality. I fear, however, that there are those who would think ill of me in the head if I told them so. Are you going to get out of bed?
Don't wanna, came her muffled reply. She tossed the pillow aside and grasped my hands, pulling me toward her.
Come back to bed, love. I think I need more practice with this snuggling thing.
I slipped my hands from her grip and laughed aloud at her ploy. I think when it comes to snuggling, you're quite an adept student. I don't believe further tutelage is necessary. Besides, I am bathed and dressed for the day.
You look quite beautiful, too.
She answered in that charming way she has about her. She leaned up on one elbow and smiled, flashing me a glimpse of those Parisian blue bedroom eyes she can put on so easily.
That dress is very pretty on you. I bet it would look even better off of you.
She finished as she made a quick move to reach out for me once again. I moved to the end of the bed and controlled her from there. She tossed a sheet aside and grinned. Moving her hands and knees, she crawled, panther-like, towards me. I could feel the heated flush rise to my cheeks as she did whatever I saw her body like this. God, she's so incredibly beautiful. I can't even believe that she's mine. I had to physically shake my head to break the spell that she was apparently used to control with me. I jumped up and waggled a playful finger in her direction.
Oh no, don't you dare.
That adorable pout that she swears she doesn't have pulls at her mouth. I couldn't take it. If I didn't do something quick, I swear I was going to burst into laughter at any moment. Remember, my love, conquerors who lays about in bed all day don't get their dessert after dinner. Her grin returned. Those blue eyes sparkled as she quickly grasped the double meaning of my statement.
Oh, all right. I'll be good.
I heard her say those words as I poured her a mug of tea from the pot that Scylla had recently brought. When I spun around again to face her, my breath very nearly stopped. Stretched out on her side along the length of the bed, she held her hand in the palm of her hand. She was stunning, lying there wearing nothing but an amused smile.
What?
She asked, the picture of innocence. I just...
Hmm?
She ran long fingers through her sleep-tousled hair. I can't think straight when you lie there like that, I blurted out. Her throaty laughter affected me almost as much as the sight of her nude figure. She reached over and pulled the sheet around her, sitting up and accepting the tea I offered.
It's simply good to know that I can affect you that way,
she said with a smile. She brushed her hand against mine as she took the mug from my grasp, and I paused. More than you know, my love. More than you know. I answered her, raising the same hand to lightly touch her cheek.
So, you saw that even conquerors like to occasionally sleep in,
she began.
Where is your day taking you in such a hurry, little one?
I'm going to check on Solon to see if he needs anything, I answered.
Alone?
I stood there, thinking about my answer for a moment. Xena was an incredibly complex woman, but at the same time, she seemed to suffer certain insecurities. I knew that I was, and will always be, one of her greatest areas of concern. I sat back down beside her on bed. I wasn't sure how to begin, how to tell her of the thoughts I had rolling around in my brain. Frankly, I wasn't altogether certain about what I was doing myself. I only know that this course of action felt as though it was the right thing to do. I'm uncertain how to explain this to you. It seems that Solon's wounds go much deeper than a simple beating and some broken bones. I'm honestly undecided that this is even the right thing to do, I said, brushing my bangs away from my eyes in a frustrated gesture. I just have this feeling, Xena. This feeling that Solon is asking for help with the things he does and the way he acts. I think he needs people around him right now who won't always be shocked or offended by his behavior. I'm sure he was raised in an honorable fashion, and it seems as if people have turned a blind eye to his ways because of who he is. From all that I've read, that's not the way centaurs expect their leaders to act. It's not right, Xena. He's a young man who may inherit the centaur nation someday. Even if he were recognized as the son of the conqueror, it still wouldn't be right. I think we have a duty to him, I added, my head bowed, not raising my eyes to her. I'm not sure why. It just feels as though we do, I finished. I waited then. I could hear her breathing. We sat so close I could feel the heat coming from her body. With my eyes closed like this, I swear I could hear the cadence of her heart. I heard a deep sigh and I knew the storm was coming. She would fight against displaying any anger for me, for she loved me, but I envisioned her temper getting the best of her at this instance.
You are magnificent, do you know that?
I heard a voice finally say. My head snapped up, and I saw her eyes narrow, their hue turning that deep blue as they always do when she's trying to hold back her emotions. She once told me that I was an enigma to her, and on this day, at this very moment, she is that for me. She looked small and vulnerable sitting on her bed, only a sheet casually draped about her. One or two slightly gray hairs at a temple are the only indication of her age. I'm sure I'm open-mouthed because I suddenly find her smiling shyly at me.
You expected me to shout, didn't you?
Well, I guess I did expect a rather different reaction, I answered. She chuckled softly at my response.
Well, I suppose I still have a few unpredictable moments left in me, then. Gabrielle, I know my pride doesn't let me show it often, but I trust your feelings and your insight. You have gifts that can't be easily explained, but that doesn't mean we should discount them. I've seen too much in my lifetime not to believe in the unbelievable.
She placed her mug of tea upon the low-lying table beside the bed, and then moved to face me fully.
Much as every instinct in me tells me to patch up that boy and get him as far from our lives as possible, I'm willing to defer to the feeling that you have. To tell the truth, somewhere deep down, I want to be able to help him. I want to be able to help him like I wish someone would have helped me at his age, Gabrielle.
She hung her head for a moment, and knew she was back there once more. Her life was so full of regrets and personal shame that if she were a weaker woman, she might never have stepped back into the light. I smiled as she was replaying the times when she had not been there for her son. Perhaps she even reminisced on the times when she wished her own mother had been there in her life when she was Solon's age.
He has so much anger, so much hate and blackness fills his heart. I see myself in him and I fear for him, Gabrielle. He doesn't have one thing that I have, and one thing that could lead him away from all that darkness.
What, Zina? What does he have?
He doesn't have you,
she stated simply. I was speechless. I hadn't yet expected and realized the esteem Zina placed upon me. How much credit she gave me in a battle that she'd begun seasons before she met me. I felt the Zina the Conqueror, the destroyer of nations, had died long before I came to be here. For some reason, however, Zina's thought of redemption for herself revolved on me. I knew the truth. But if her love for me gave her one added stone's weight of will against the beast that hid behind her, then I would gladly accept this responsibility. He has both of us, I answered.
I want you to know you don't have to go, Gabrielle.
I stopped her with a gentle hand. He's in no position to physically hurt me, Zina, and he can't wound me with his words. I've come through too much, my love, to let a spoiled, selfish young man take away my dignity. I've held on to that one last thing through everything. I may have lost a great deal of respect and self-esteem along the way, but the only thing I could ever be able to keep with me, no matter what circumstances, was some tatter of dignity. I won't let Solon take that away. Zina looked at me as if I had just told her I was a man. She shook off the stunned expression and smiled broadly.
You constantly amaze me, little one, for you have left me nearly speechless. Who are you and what have you done with that tiny blonde who used to cower at my feet?
Do you want her back? I asked.
Absolutely not. I love the woman you've become, Gabrielle, very much. So you take your guard with you?
Yes, love. How could I possibly hide from Atreus? He is taking his duties quite seriously, I might add. He's been outside our doors since sunup. Zina chuckled, and I knew it amused her to tease the captain in such a fashion. I will never understand warriors and their sense of humor. She told me of her plans to release the captain after a fortnight as my personal guard. Until then, she seemed content to watch Atreus prove his allegiance to the conqueror by submitting to her will.
Perhaps it would be best if we met him separately, then at least at first. That way he can't play us against each other, and I won't black his other eye for disrespecting you. Tell me, little one, when shall I see you again today, eh? Now that you are the lady of the castle, have you no time for me?
She asked with a smile. I noticed she let the sheet, covering her, slip from her shoulders, her bedroom eyes back in place. Two can play at this game of torturous seduction, my conqueror. I may not see you till the evening meal, but I promise to give you my full attention then. I smiled back at her, standing up and smoothing my skirt.
Ah, this evening is so far away. Do I get nothing to cling on to until then?
She leaned back on both hands, allowing the sheet to fall the rest of the way. I believed I surprised her with the speed of my actions. I pressed one hand against her chest, pushing her to lie flat against the bed, her long legs dangling over the ledge. I leaned over her, hovering just above her skin, my index finger tenderly playing with the hardening skin around her nipple, my tongue teasing her lips. I kissed her, gently at first, then roughly. My tongue entered her mouth, and she sucked firmly, finally allowing me this little dominance over her. Oh, she had no idea what I would demand of her later. I was in a strange mood today. I've moved my kisses along her jaw, then upwards, using my tongue to tease her ear. Using my finger and thumb, I massaged her nipple, hearing her breathing pick up. Without warning, I pinched the hardened nub of flesh sharply, delighting in the strangling mode that escaped her lips. "Listen to my words, my love," I whispered in her ear. "Let these sensations be your companions today, as you think constantly on the attention I plan to pay you this evening. I promise you three things, my conqueror. Tonight, you will do my bidding." I squeezed the flesh of my fingers again, listening to her sharp intake of breath. "Tonight, you will belong to me." I tugged as I pinched in her nipple, and I was met with a ragged groan. "And tonight, Zina, you will scream my name." I kissed her hard on the mouth, kneading each of her breasts in my hands. I was nearly undone myself by the whimpers of pleasure that vibrated against my lips. I abruptly pulled away, leaning down for one quick peck on her cheek, and then I quickly left our rooms. I'm sure Atreus was curious as to the smile on my face. It grew even broader when I heard Zina's voice from inside our bedchamber.
"Oh, God!"
She let out a groan of frustration. To be continued.
Well, that concludes chapters 6 and a half of 7 of The Petal of the Rose from the Conqueror series. I hope everybody's enjoying that. I know it's a cruel place to leave it, but I'm feeling in that kind of a cruel mood. If anyone has any suggestions on either a song or a movie or a book they'd like to recommend, or any suggestions for the show, please send me an email at zina.uber@gmail.com. I will be posting I'm going to go ahead and post the snippet of the x-ray that the doctor gave me. So you guys, if you want to check it, if you're that interested in my in my pain and misery, you can go ahead and check it out on my blog spot. I'll have a picture of the x-ray up there so that you could see exactly what kind of titanium bionic woman I am now. If anybody has any emails they want to drop me, by the way, thank you everyone for all the emails of well-wishing and stuff. Please keep them coming along. Send me any jokes or anything like that, or any other stories you'd like me to read. It gives me something to do while I'm sitting here stir-crazy for the next 2 weeks. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.